FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 4/23/20. Well, you've been watching gold go up, silver lagging as always, but perhaps it might be on its way to glory now. Well, there's a lot of other things going on in the economy as well, and some of them are causing these trends. What's your opinion? Where do you think gold is heading and silver? What do you think of QE to infinity and infinite money printing? I would call it insane modern monetary theory, IMMT. Just write us, email kl@kerrylutz.com. That's kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, our good friend from TF Metals Report, and you find him at tfmetalsreport.com, Craig Hemke with us. Craig foresaw all of these gains, these outside gains in precious metals and the miners, and he's with us here to bring us up to date. And Craig, it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Kerry. It's always fun to visit with you. Yeah, these are some crazy times, my friend.
My goodness. Well, look, we've been calling for this. I've known you 8 or 9 years now, and we knew this was going to happen. We always said the next crash would be far worse than 08-09. Here we are, and this makes 08-09 look like a little stroll in the park here.
Yeah, it does. And there is just so much devastation every place. You just pick one sector. I mean, you look at the energy sector with what has happened to crude oil prices. And then you can just that alone, the banks that are levered up to all these, whether they're shale companies or just regular old oil companies like ExxonMobil and Chevron and the like, the damage that is being done in that sector alone is enough to send us, reeling into a depression. And so you multiply that across, whatever else, retail, real estate. I mean, just the list, it just goes on and on. And so it's going to be, if we don't somehow get back to normal, whatever that is, in relatively short order, and I just don't, hard to see how that's going to happen. The only possible solution is really just infinite cash creation by the Fed to just flood as much cash. We had word today, Mnuchin talked about another $6.7 trillion, 2.7 in direct relief to the economy and $4 trillion more from the Fed.
Oh my God.
Whatever that means. It's craziness. Yeah, right. You and I have talked about this for as long as we've known each other. Gold's just now getting back to levels that it was in 2012. And I've certainly had my share of trolls that have reminded me of that over the last 5 or 6 years, that I've continued to hold gold this whole time. But look, the reason I bought it in 2012 is because we knew this was eventually coming. The math said so. And so now here we are. And I'm sure as hell glad I never sold it.
Yeah. Hey, well, unfortunately, I had to sell a little to pay for a couple of weddings and a divorce and some taxes, but I managed to keep on hold of a chunk. And silver, never disposed of any of my silver, thank goodness, because you just know what's going to happen to silver here.
Yeah, probably. That's driving a lot of people crazy, because it's still just perceived as an industrial metal, and it's traded by a lot of algos, and the algos have been watching crude oil go down, and they think that's deflationary, and so that impacts the trading of silver. I think what's far more interesting, though, Kerry, is this disconnect that's happening. And you could see this a little bit about what happened in crude oil this week, too. There's a real disconnect between the price that's derived through the trading of these, phony baloney derivative contracts that aren't really attached to anything, and then the actual price of the real deal. The derivative contracts in crude oil came up with a price of minus $40 a couple of days ago, specific to a contract that was going off the board. But even the front month got down to $6.55 back on Tuesday. Well, I mean, that's crazy. especially the negative part of it. And then, you know, you relate that to the precious metals and you see the derivative price of silver being $15, but then, you know, you can't
buy it for that
price. You can't get your physical metal at that price, anywhere near that price. And so what really is the price? And you got this disconnect, and that's somewhat encouraging, actually.
Yeah, the disconnect and what, the COMEX ran out of metal. They ran out of gold.
Actually, Kerry, let me interrupt you. They were shown to not have what they said they had. It wasn't that they ran out. They have been running this really fraudulent scheme called exchanges for physical for years. And it was supposed to be just a way to kind of run contracts off the exchange and settle them in London. Could even settle them for GLD shares, perhaps. Well, this just has gotten extreme. I've been counting these, the amount of contracts shifted off of the COMEX and exchanged allegedly in London. I've been counting them every day for the last couple of years. The last 2 years, they've settled over 14,000 metric tons of gold, allegedly. I mean, there's no 14,000. That's ridiculous. Then it really ramped up in the first, just the first 13 trading days of March before all this blew up. They did another 900 metric tons. 290,000 COMEX contracts, 900 metric tons, allegedly settled, exchanged for physical in the first part of March. And allegedly done, you know, there's all these 100-ounce bars that the COMEX allegedly says they have. Well, then in these shortages with the refineries closed and the like, someone actually, you know, said, huh, look at this. COMEX says they do these EFPs every day. Well, hell's bells. Let's just go get some of that. We need some gold. We'll just go there. And so a couple of actual, you know, wholesalers or whatever showed up and said, we'll take some of these EFPs for your 100-ounce bars. And then COMEX quickly said, well, I'm sorry, we don't actually have any 100-ounce bars. Right. What? That's the standard for your exchange. It just, it pulled back the curtain for everybody to see it was all bullshit.
Yeah, it was totally the Wizard of Oz moment. And yet, why didn't the markets crash? Why didn't the COMEX go into oblivion at that point? I don't get it. Like,
well, because people still want to believe it's real. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's still this, nobody really pays attention to it. There's, you know, you don't really get any discussion on CNBC or Bloomberg. You know, you get people like me or, you know, other bloggers and bullion sites that are actually out there explaining and telling the truth about what a fraud this all is. But nobody really cares because so many people have a vested interest in keeping it going. You're not going to get somebody from Bloomberg to go report how JP Morgan or HSBC is fraudulently setting the price of gold with all these fake derivatives and unallocated stuff. Man, that's who butters their bread. You know, they've got to have the banks on board playing ball for their advertising and for all their guests during the day and all this other stuff. And so all these, the big money still has an interest in perpetuating this scheme, you know, as if all is well.
Yes.
And the fun part will be if, when, whatever, it all just blows up around them, you know, that suddenly people do say, no, you know what, I'm not playing this game anymore. this is such a disaster. I've got to have my actual gold. That, and then they find out that JP Morgan and HSBC and the like have not only sold your gold, they've sold it 50 times over to other people.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets interesting.
It's like that show, The Producers, where the producers produce a losing play and, you know, they never anticipated that it would be a success and they sold like 1,000% and now they can't pay off the investors because it turned out to be a hit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've been using an example that I actually saw on Twitter for people that just are just beginning to understand how this actually works. Unallocated gold is just gold that's, you know, just fractional reserve system, just like your bank. You know, you deposit money in the bank doesn't hold all of it. They loan it all out. That's what these banks have done with physical gold as well. Mm-hmm. And because nobody wants to take delivery because, well, you know, there's a risk or, you know, they don't want to pay storage costs or whatever. They basically let the banks just hold it for them with the promise that they can get it sometime if they ever need it. But nobody ever steps up and wants it. So the bank just sells it over and over and over again. This has been proven. There have been lawsuits of people being charged storage fees for metal that's not even there. Class action suits in that regard. It's like this. It's like Kerry, you're, I don't know, you used to live in New York, didn't you?
Yeah, I have to admit I did, but thank goodness not now.
Did you ever want a car when you were in New York?
Well, I always had a car, but that's...
But it's a pain in the ass, right?
Big pain.
I mean, you got to pay insurance and you got to park at some place and all this kind of crap. But it's nice to get out of town every once in a while. So you come to me and you say, Craig, I'd like to buy that your car. And I say, oh, because you want it just to know you have it if you ever need it. And I say, okay, fine. And then you say, well, but I don't want to pay to park it and all that kind of stuff. You just keep it at your house. And then, but if I ever need it, it's mine. Okay, Kerry, no problem. And then you never come to get it. And I wise up to this. And I'm like, well, hell's bells. Why can't I sell Kerry's car to somebody else? And just under the same, you know, set of circumstances. So somebody else says the same thing. And then all of a sudden there's like 50 people in New York City that think they own the same car. And again, that's all fine and dandy for me as JP Morgan or HSBC in this example. It's just that when you and a handful of other people all show up at the same time needing the car to get out of Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one car.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's such an apt analogy. And we've seen this many times over in many different things. We saw it with the copper contracts in China a while ago, a couple of years ago, when everything was cross-collateralized. And nobody knew whose collateral belonged to whom. Hey, one thing I got to go back to, and it was such a clarion call. And of course, the mainstream totally missed it. And you and I nailed it. We go back to the repo crash back in September. And that was the sign. That was the first crack in the exterior, in the facade. It's kind of like you live in a rundown house, but you've got a facade of the Parthenon in front of your house, and everyone thinks you live in this great place. And then all of a sudden a storm hits and blows the facade away. And then they see you're really living in a slum in a bad part of town.
Yeah. You mentioned that. I'm thinking about Blazing Saddles now, right?
Yeah.
Where they all roll into Rock Ridge and it's the fake Rock Ridge.
Yeah.
but you're right. And you often like to point out, and I appreciate it very much when you do, you know, how we had this figured out last year. Mm-hmm. You know, they were trying to tell us in 2018, the Fed was just going to, and they'd been telling us this for 4 or 5 years, the Fed was going to keep drawing down the balance sheet and everything was going back to normal. It was all garbage. It was never going to happen. And it finally got to this breaking point in late 2018, where they had drawn the balance sheet down by, you know, whatever it was at that $600 billion or something at that point. They'd raised a 10-year note rate up over 3% and the stock market crashed.
Yeah. Well, that ain't funny how that works.
And so they immediately began to reverse course. You know, we noticed that and thought, well, this is just like 2010. And so we thought last year was going to be the first breakout year for gold and silver. And it was, and gold in particular. I guess silver hasn't really soared yet, but gold, it was below 1350 for 6 years. And so, I mean, it was kind of a novel idea to think that it would break out last year, and it did. And we thought, well, this year it's only going to continue. And it has. We've already reached our price target in gold, the one I had for this year, but I didn't, you know, obviously see all this virus collapse coming either. But what it has really done is it's increased the visibility of the entire sector. And we've got cash rolling in now, just looking for a home. There's only limited places it can go. And so a lot of the shares are going like crazy. The GDX, Kerry, the big ETF of large cap mining shares, since QE to infinity was announced not even a month ago on March 23rd, since QE, it's up 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Newmont Mining just increased their dividend to $1 a share, which is about 1.6%. What other industry are they increasing dividends at this point? Yeah. So people need to be aware. I mean, they think, well, gold's gone up a long ways, or the mining shares have gone up a long way. No, they haven't. No, they got a long ways to go. And so there's still time to position yourself to profit from what is definitely still coming.
Yeah, for sure. There's no question. And the lower energy prices make these mining companies fabulously profitable, because all their PEAs, their preliminary economic assessments, and their PFSs all assume a very much higher energy price. And now, if I was a mining company CEO, I'd be buying those energy futures because it's a natural hedge.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Trilogy Metals is a world-class developer in Alaska's Ambler Mining District. The company already possesses 8 billion pounds of copper, 3 billion pounds of zinc, over 1 million gold equivalent ounces, and now over 77 million pounds of cobalt. Trilogy's Arctic project boasts an after-tax net present value of $1.4 billion with a 33% IRR. Trilogy is led by an experienced management team with proven success in discovering and developing projects in Alaska. The company is well capitalized, has no debt, and possesses strong institutional support. Trilogy trades on the New York and Toronto exchanges under the ticker symbol TMQ. To learn more, go to TrilogyMetals.com. That's TrilogyMetals.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
I suppose that's right. But yeah, and Kerry, in this upcoming round of earnings releases and then into the next quarter, the second quarter that we're currently in, what other sector has earnings that are growing?
Yeah, there isn't any.
Name me one. There's not one anywhere.
None.
So here's where it gets exciting. The global asset allocation to the precious metals in all their forms, whether it's futures contracts, these unallocated accounts, we talk about mining shares, whatever, was still only about 1% as this year began.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if it just goes to 2% because of, you know, for all these fundamental reasons, QE to infinity. So you want physical metal prices go higher, the leverage you get out of the shares expands. What if it goes to 2%? I mean, that's, you know, billions and billions and billions of investable assets that are going to be looking for a home. Well, there's only so many Newmonts out there.
Yeah.
And there's only so many exploration companies that are sitting on, you know, 10 million provable ounces in the ground that they're just waiting for a higher price or for somebody to come gobble it up. There's only so many of those things out there. So when you get this huge amount of cash chasing a finite amount of goods, I mean, that's Econ 101.
Yeah.
I mean, prices go up.
For sure.
And so this is a great time to be in the sector. This is a great time to be paying attention. Crisis. What's the Chinese thing about crisis?
Danger and opportunity. Two
right.
symbols. Yes.
There you go.
And the Hebrew symbol for luck, the word is mazel. That has three symbols: time, place, opportunity. So this.
How about that?
Yeah. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. It's a, and again, things could change.
Of course.
And, you know, and maybe we all get back, you know, the virus kind of, maybe in the best case scenario, everything looks great by the fall. But even if that's the case, that's extraordinarily positive for gold because of all of this cash that's been created is ultimately inflationary, kind of stagflationary, like the 1970s, which you remember well because you were in your 50s back then. You were what, in your 50s back then?
Yeah, just about.
And that was a great time for gold. In fact, by the end of the 1970s, that asset allocation I was talking about peaked at 8%. 8%. Can you imagine we get to eight times the amount of cash in the sector in the years ahead that we have now? Oh, my God.
We'll be out of gold then. We'll be out of gold by then, for sure.
Yeah. It's not going to take 1971 to 1979 for gold to go up 22 times and for these mining shares to go up, you know, 30, 40 and 50 times. Everything's on steroids these days. Like I said, my price target last year, I thought we'd be there in the end of the year. We were there in August. My price target this year, I thought we'd be there by the end of the year. We're there in April. I mean, everything's getting condensed. And so this next move, multiples higher and all this stuff, it's not going to take 8 or 9 years. It's just not. And so that's where people need to, as much as you're hunkered down, worried, nervous about where this all heads from here, there's still a great opportunity if you're, you know, planning and thinking and then acting accordingly.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I couldn't agree with you more. This is the ultimate opportunistic market for those whose minds are open. I'm in a lot different spot psychologically than I was in 08 and 09, where I thought it was the end of the world. I was wrong and missed out on a lot of opportunities as a result. But here, I don't know if it's the end of the world or not, but the market sure are acting like it is.
Yeah. You know, and I just one last thing I just would want people to be wary of and guarded and cautious. We talked about crude oil and this glut of crude oil, no demand, these producing countries like Saudi Arabia, Iran, even Russia. I mean, they don't, maybe not so much, I shouldn't really group them in, but you know, the Middle Eastern countries, they don't have any other source of revenue, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like they make stuff. They just pump oil. And so when the price falls, the only way they can keep the revenue going is to pump even more, right? Which makes the glut worse and price fall even further. The thing that we all need to be wary of at this point is a decision by the Saudis or the Iranians or some, you know, the parties in the Middle East to say, well, you know what, if it costs us 50,000 lives, fine, it's for the better of everybody. Let's start a war.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of predicting. I believe these chart patterns we've seen before, we saw them not as exaggerated and distorted as they are now, but in 2001, 2000, 2001, the lead up to the war on terror. And we saw it in pre-World War One, where stocks just traded down for no reason. Nobody got it because it was the buildup to World War One. And the secret, it's always hidden in the charts. It's always there for those who can see it. And my bet is, I don't know if it's going to be World War Three, but it's certainly worth their while to start something there. And just today, Trump, Trump warned the Iranians to shoot to kill if they harass our ships anymore. And it's in their interest to send a bunch of bathtubs to go up against our carrier groups and get them all sunk, because then it'll drive up the price of oil, at least for a while.
Yeah, you get the Iranians to fire a bunch of missiles into the Saudi refining capacity.
Yeah.
Saudis turn around and do the same thing to those places that the Iranians have on the Persian Gulf, all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, you could all of a sudden get crude oil back into the 30s, 40s, 50s or whatever real quick.
Instantly.
People need to, I mean, that's make it sound like I'm kind of giving a wag the dog type scenario here. But I don't think anybody with a realistic view of the world is probably listening to you and I talk about this going, oh, those guys are crazy. you can see that coming a mile away.
If you're thinking that, think again, because there's a certain inevitability to this.
Yeah.
And I do think, the war cycle is there. It's real. And it's a real possibility here.
Yeah.
I mean, real possibility.
What are the Ayatollahs in the House of Saud going to do if we go to $8, $5 crude oil and stay there?
You know, it's to the point where the taxes on a gallon of gas are higher than the actual raw material, by several magnitudes.
Good point.
That's like crazy. And I remember, I didn't have my license yet, but my father used to stop at Pathmark gas station. Regular was $19.9 and premium was $22.9, 22 cents we're talking about. And they used to give you, wash your windows and give you a free glass that didn't last very long. You throw it in the dishwasher for the first time and you'd have shards of glass in the morning, but they gave you a free glass. At least you could drink something out of it. And if you wanted to hand wash it, it probably could last a long time. I always knew that oil would crash again because it's a boom and bust type commodity. I've never bought into the scarcity of it ever. I don't believe that it's a scarce commodity. Call me crazy. Maybe it flies in the face of reality. I don't know. But I always thought that for the right price, there's always plenty of it around. And here we are, man. It's a crazy world. So
it certainly is. And again, it's not just the Saudis and the Iranians that need the oil price to go up. The bankers do too.
Yeah, the banksters, for sure.
Yep.
Look, there's a million people that work in the energy sector in the United States, all in high-paying jobs, mostly. Even the janitors in North Dakota make six figures. And there's no way that they're going to sit by and watch that sector shut down.
Right,
exactly. It's an impossibility. It's the biggest business in the world, arguably larger than anything other than government debt. And they're just not going to allow, before all this craziness started, it was a $5.5 billion business per day. It's a couple trillion dollar a year business, and now it's going to go to zero. I don't think so, Craig. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I know they're going to do it.
Right. Right. And that's something everybody just needs to be aware of.
Yeah. Yeah, be aware of it and be ready for it. Then we'll see what happens with gold when the price of energy skyrockets for some reason.
Exactly. Then all of a sudden we're talking inflation. You want to see silver take off. There you go.
Yeah. So all of this is a setup for what is going to occur in the months ahead. No question in my mind about it. So, you know, we'll have to do another webinar shortly, post-pandemic investing, because it's going to be totally different than pre-pandemic investing. That's for certain.
It's a good idea.
All right. Well, hey, so tfmetalsreport.com. Just tell us how we sign up and join the conversation. I mean, there must be your forum there must be like nonstop now.
Yeah, it's pretty big. Keeps me busy, no doubt about that. And I guess unwittingly, I made a pretty good case earlier as to why you need to be in the sector and paying attention to it again. I think the community that we have there makes it more valuable than anything else. But for the analysis every day, it's, you know, a whopping $12 a month. I know money's tight at this time, but just alone, if you understand what's going on and you want to try to stack some metal or trade the mining shares, I think we can make back your $12 a month pretty quick.
In 15 minutes. Attention.
So, just tfmetalsreport.com. There's a subscribe button. You can click there, watch a little video, find out more about the site and how it works. And I just, man, like I said, I just hard to imagine a better time to be paying attention to the sector.
Yeah. And if you were really smart, you were paying attention a year ago.
True.
You know, like in the summer, that's when it kind of started really taking off there. I guess it was May and June and July. And then it pulled back almost so predictably, pulled back 1500s. That became the baseline. That became support. And then we just watched it go up. And then one thing we didn't talk about, and we'll kind of leave it off at that, is the futures. So the futures, near-term future price hit 1788 last week.
Right.
And what does that tell you?
Yeah. Well, we hit our target. Like I said, it was 1750 to 1800. It's going to be very interesting to see, kind of like the issue with oil this week, where when the price went to negative 40 was because that contract, the May contract for crude oil futures, was going off the board. And if you still owned it, you had to take delivery. And there's no place to take delivery, no place to put it. And then so therefore that nobody wanted it, you were left with nothing but sellers. And the price just went from $20 to minus $40 in a day. We're looking at sort of the opposite situation in the precious metals, which is very interesting because they too have a delivery phase, but it's the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. People looking to get their hands on it and people and banks scrambling to come up with it to meet those demands. And so, the futures are, especially as they go into this actual delivery, May will be a delivery month for silver and then we'll be in it again for June for gold. That's when things get a little hairy. And so it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
Hey, you know, that old term, you're an old trader from way back, stand or deliver.
Yeah, it's about right. It's about right, my friend. Yeah. So anyway, it just kind of ties it all back. There are a lot of things going on.
Yeah. Yes.
This is the time to be paying attention.
Yeah. And we're only getting a glimpse of what's really behind the curtain here because we don't really know because we don't have firsthand data, firsthand knowledge of what's really happening behind the scenes. But we infer, we make inferences, informed inferences. We don't just pull numbers out of the sky, which seems to be the way that things work on the internet. Our inferences are based on logic and what's happening, the information that we are getting. But the odds are, Craig, it's far worse and far more desperate than anything we could ever imagine. And I'll leave it at that. Guys, write us. Get Craig's opinion. I'll pass it on to him. KL@CarrieLutz.com. KL@CarrieLutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And of course, the website's financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Craig, thank you so much. And I always look forward to speaking with you, getting your latest opinion, because you have been so spot on correct. I mean, for years, we talked about the yen gold trade, and that was the ultimate lock or the maximum price that gold could go. And that went away, just like you said. And we are now where we are. It's fascinating to watch. Anyway, tfmetalsreport.com. Go over there. Be part of the community. It's a great thing. Craig, we'll talk to you soon.
All the best, my friend. Stay healthy.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.